special mention to Simi Sunseed and Shoshana Gell for giving this event the flavor of a woman's night out. We love it. We love it. I do have to mention a special thanks to the woman who's for sure hiding in the back, Esty Erlanger, my partner in crime, who's never out when I mention her name. Thank you to Alan and Mimi Pomerantz of El Toro Periodontist for hosting this year's event in your beautiful venue. Dentist office. Our thoughts and our prayers are with the COLE's Director of Women's Learning, Sipora Summers, who's in the hospital with a serious pneumonia. This year, we're focusing on social wellness, and our keynote speaker is Denver's very own Deborah Fine. Please see the program for her complete bio on the side here. When I heard Deborah speak at the Cherry Creek Parents Seminar, that was 2 years back, I absolutely knew that I wanted to bring her to this event. Her words so resonated with me that I wanted to share it with you. So thank you for coming tonight. Thank you to Deborah for generously giving us your time and wisdom. We truly appreciate it because we all know that you could have been spending this time training professionals out in Taiwan or wherever. Deborah, please come down.
Thank you.
She will be autographing books at the end at the registration table. I forgot the word you said. Thank you. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you, Esty. Thank you. It's great to be. I'm with my community. I'm really glad
to be here tonight. Just a little touch about who I am. I used to be an engineer. Anybody else here an engineer? Your husband. So you have to talk to an engineer. That's even worse than being one. There's a little laugh here for a good reason. It's because I chose engineering not because I like to chat with people. It was just the opposite. It's truly. I was great at math. I didn't want to be a teacher. I became an engineer. But as an engineer, I was about 60% of the time placed behind a banquet tables, exhibit hall tables, and represented projects to people like yourself that would come up to a table. And I had no problem doing that. I was very well trained. But if you put me into a room like this with people I didn't know, and I hardly know anyone here, although I do want to give shout outs before I go on. And number one is to Shoshana Gelt. Because Shoshana, yes, and Svee Gelt, Svee made such a huge difference. I met you the first night. Svee Gelt made such a difference in my business life, and he's such a great man besides. But when I started my business, the fine art of small talk, to teach small talk to people, even my girlfriend said to me, that is a stupid idea. Who would want to learn small talk? And I got what they were saying. I was an engineer. You know, we think small talk is a waste of saliva. So I really understood that. But I was very, very lucky in that Svee Gelt decided 21 years ago that attorneys needed small talk, needed to become better rainmakers, needed to be able to go in the community and reach out and build a presence within the community. And I would have never thought of it. I don't know, Shoshana, I just never thought of lawyers. I just thought it was dorky engineers like me. So it was because of Svee that 40% of my business is spent with law firms and retreat. I look much better with them lights off. So a big shout out to Shoshana. And then just now I saw Ray, I'm going to struggle with your last name. It's been years. Nagrin? Did I get it right? Ray. I mean, Ray and I raised children together. And I just read the Jewish news 2 weeks ago. I'm a little behind on my Jewish news. So it was 2 weeks ago. We called him Teddy. I don't know. What do we call him now, Ray? He's a calligrapher for Torah, for it's amazing. I said, was that your, but he didn't have a beard when he was 12 years old. So that's the last one I saw. So anyways, it is great to see some people that I know here. I live in this community. I raise my children here. I like to brag about my children. They're self-supporting. Isn't that great? Okay, so one inspiration for teaching conversation skills was that I've been an engineer and been a dork and didn't know how to go through a room full of people like this and just talk to people or make friends or go to shul and go to kiddush. And even meet another mom. If she came up to me, that would be fine, but I would certainly never go up to somebody that I didn't know and say hello to you. I expected you to do that for me. So that was one epiphany that started my thoughts about conversation. The second reason I became, that I really focused on it, was that in 1988, and most of you weren't born then, but I know, who did I just meet right now? Is it, you're her mother, Mrs. Adina. Mrs. Barron? No.
She's right
here. Adina. Yeah. You're Adina's mother? No? You're not? Who's your mother? I'm so confused. Oh, I got it now. Okay, whatever. So in 1988, when some of you were alive, Oprah and I, that year, we both lost 65 pounds. That's where I'm trying to get to. And now, Oprah is doing this again, as some of you watch TV. No. And I tell you this about myself because I was obese. So I weighed a little over 300 pounds for most of my life till I was in my almost late 30s. When you're like that in this world, you're excluded from a lot of things. Girls didn't invite me to their birthday parties. No one asked me out for a date till I got out of college. So my best friends were books. Books came easily. Walking into a room like this where I didn't know anybody, I mean, Ray, you just walked in. And Shoshana was wonderful, ran up to me, and I thought she was someone else, but that's all. And otherwise, I don't know anyone here. To walk into a room like this, do you know in my other life what I would have done, whether I was the professional speaker or simply a guest? I would have waited to walk in until the program began. You don't really think I could sit with people I don't know or stand around and mingle knowing that a spotlight is on me and all of you know I have no one to talk to. That's exactly how I felt when I walked into a room. So I spent a year's worth of time on research, everything, icebreakers, what do you say to open conversations with someone, how do you get through those awkward moments when maybe you're sitting around a meal, you've all introduced yourself, you've described your connection, and then where do you go from there? Listening skills that help develop rapport, conversation killers to avoid. Here's a good one. I mean, a lot of you will be familiar with this. Esty and I talked about it, so I have permission to say, you're going to have another baby? I mean, who talks like that? Like, that is a conversation killer. It's not cool. I even researched exit lines so that never again, in order to get away from someone, do you do one of these numbers. Deborah, I've got to go. I've got to call the babysitter. And 5 minutes later, I find out your kids are grown and in college. There's ways to get away from people without misleading them and ways to get away from people so they can't hold us hostage for one more moment than we are willing to be held hostage for. So I thought it would be fun to go over a couple of these ideas tonight to help bring community together. I know that even as a transplant here to Colorado, I mean, over 30 years, so this is my community now, I remember what a struggle it was to go to find a shul, to feel comfortable somewhere, to go to events, to continue to go to events, that unless I know people there, I feel like a sort of a fly out of water. On the other hand, this community is so wonderful, and I'll now do one more shout-out, and that's to Rabbi Haman. And to Zvi Geld once again, because he's just threaded through my life. But my father, when he visits here, goes to Aish for Minyan and for Shabbat. But he goes to Aish because that's our community, that's where we live. And one day he came home with a card, and it was from Rabbi Haman. And that's because Rabbi Haman walked up to a gentleman he'd never seen before, not just introducing himself and saying, welcome to our shul, which I'm guessing, Rabbi, you would do to anybody. So warm of you. But he took the conversation further. Because how did he get to the part where he found out that Dr. Fine, well, welcome, where are you in? From Buffalo. Well, what brings you here? I mean, that whole approach, Rabbi, of trying to find out, and I'm sure you're very, very busy. Your wife told me you were. So you're very, very busy. And to take the time with a stranger is what this program is really all about. To get to the point where, to have a real conversation with my father, where it got to the point where, oh, I've heard of your daughter, Deborah Fine. Is that, yes, that's my daughter. And, of course, my father, who to this day says to me, I still don't understand what you do, came home with a card from a rabbi. This is a man that's gone to Minyan his entire life. And the first time he did not eat kosher food was in the Navy in World War II. Came home with a card from a rabbi saying, he knew who his daughter was. I mean, isn't that, it's all because of Rabbi Haman. And Zvi Geld, it turns out, did the same thing. It's not like I looked like my father. There's no resemblance. I didn't go to the shul. He comes home. well, Deb, here's somebody else that knows you. He's a lawyer, which is very impressive to my father. You know, my father's a pediatrician, so but I don't know, whatever. But so he says, he knows you. That's because Fee walked up to him and said, who are you? What brings you here? What's your connection? Why would you be visiting? To get it to the point where he would know that Deb Fine is his daughter. Isn't that amazing? When was the last time that happened to you? Or more importantly, when was the last time you did it? Sometimes I get lazy. When I walk into rooms where I know people or services where I know people, oh, it's so good to see you. So great to see you. And we talk and we catch up about our lives and we don't notice the person standing over there by themselves who has no one to talk to. So I'd like you to consider doing what I make myself do. It becomes a task for me. Not a tough task like the laundry. A task because I'm intentional about it. For me, it doesn't come naturally. Some of you were born with the gift of gab. I watched you tonight. But for the rest of us, and sometimes the people born with the gift of gab have all these circles of people around them. And then there's people standing over here. There's no one to talk to. I'm asking you to walk up to them and engage them in conversation. To do exactly what the rabbi did with my father. And by engaging, it's not just to say, welcome to our shul, it's good to have you. We hope we see you again. But to have a real conversation with someone. Most people don't do that unless that is their function. They're on the membership committee or they're expected to play that role. I'm saying that all of us are leaders and can do this if we ask ourselves to do that and then go talk to our friends. Most of us don't walk up to strangers because you might reject me. You might reject me. So why would I ever risk walking up to any of you? You might reject me. I remind myself when I feel that fear or that being overwhelmed that it's riskier to take I-25 in either direction. And it is, isn't it? So get over it. And the other thing I'm going to ask you to consider tonight, and I think what resonated with Esty, was as what the Rabbi Haman did, as what Spiegelt always does, is to assume the burden of other people's comfort during these interactions. So, for instance, whether you forgot somebody's name, let's say, Lori, you and I had met before, and I run into you at Choices or wherever. In my other life, I would have stood there. You and I would continue talking. We both knew we forgot each other's names. We both keep talking. We're hoping for something to come to us, you know, from I don't know where. And then 4 or 5 minutes later, we'd part. You knew that I knew that I knew that you knew that we knew that we didn't know each other's names. That's what I would do. Now what I know is it's up to me to make you feel comfortable, Lori. It used to be all about my comfort. I was embarrassed that I forgot your name, or I felt awkward or uncomfortable that I couldn't get it. So I just pretended and kept going. Now it's up to me to say, I know I've had to ask you, what, 5 times now? I'm just terrible with names. Could you please remind me? Or, you know, I'm having a brain freeze. Please remind me. Because if you don't know that person's name, they're going to know it. And the goal is to make them feel comfortable. So here's some other ideas. When you open a conversation, the best way to open it is based on commonality, free information. Free information tonight is, how are you involved with Kollel? Some of you are members, some of you are not, right? You're part of a community who attended an evening. Have you always lived in Denver? That's free information about occasion, location. We are all in Denver tonight. Doesn't mean we're all from Denver. Just means we're here. That's another way to start a conversation with someone. There's no perfect way to start a conversation. Do you know why? I'll tell you why. Because everybody in this room, I don't care how kind-hearted you are, without realizing it, this is what we all do. As someone approaches us, we decide whether we have the time or the interest in talking to them. If I'm there to talk to Esty, and you start engaging me in conversation, I'm going to give you one-word answers, and I'm not going to help you along in conversation because I'm worried Esty will leave. So no matter what icebreaker you will use, it will not work. If I'm a snob because I'm here just to work the room, and you aren't in a position to help me get whatever it is that I want because I'm that kind of a person, then I will give you one-word answers, and I won't help you along in the conversation. So it doesn't matter what icebreaker you use. Be the first to say hello. And then consider some ideas. For instance, when I walk in the house tonight, what do you think my husband's going to say to me? How to go? Right? Where's dinner? No, just that's a joke. Okay, so how to go? How was your day? He'll say how was your day because today I was in New York. I got back this afternoon. I was booked. You know, this is what I do for a living. So I was booked in New York yesterday. I flew back today for Estee. I called him to say it's been delayed, but trust me, at the flight I follow. You know, the flight's coming in. The airplane will be here. Everything's going to be fine. I'm just going to be a little later than I promised. So, and I was, on Sunday, I was booked in Louisville, Kentucky. So my husband hasn't seen much of me. So he's going to say, how have you been, or how are you?
Or what's your name?
Or what's your name?
Do I know you?
Where is dinner? So, when my husband asks, how was your day, or how are you, or how have you been, or how was your program? Am I certain he means that? Now, of course somebody says. He means it, but he doesn't really mean it sometimes. For instance, if there's a game on. Like if I walked in last night, I heard there was a big game. I was smart enough this morning to say, so how did the game go? I mean, from New York. So I try to stay on top of what interests him. But if I'd walked in last night, I think he would have said, how was your day? And I would have said, fine, and that probably would have been enough, which is fine. Do you know in North America, when how was your day, do you know what that means? Hello. How was Yom-Tov? You know what that means? Hello. How are the kids? It means hello. That's what it means. So when you would like to indicate to someone that you have the time and the genuine interest in talking to them, in spending a few minutes of quality conversation with them, dig in deeper to let them know you mean it. Let me give you an example. If my husband says, how's your program? I'll say, fine. If he then says, tell me about it, now I know my husband really wants to hear about this program. Because the truth is, he probably wants to hear about the trip more than he wants to hear about the program. Or he probably just wants to connect more than anything. So when he asks, how was the program? I'll say, pretty good. I won't go on about it unless he digs in deeper with one more question. But if I run into you, Lori, and you're my friend, I'll say to you, Lori, how have you been? She'll probably say, I'm great. So bring me up to date, Lori. What's new in your life since the last time I saw you? Now does she know I really mean how are you? I think she does. How are the kids? Who has kids? Who has kids? Help me out. Okay. Well, Ellen?
Yes.
Ellen. Ellen, how are your kids?
Good.
No, and that's normal. How are the kids? Good. And I would say, so bring me up to date. What's been new in their lives since the last time I saw you? Do you know now I really mean? How are your kids? I really meant it. Did you know that? No, by the way, that doesn't mean Ellen has time to talk to me about it or is interested in talking to me about it. It just means I've indicated to her that I mean it. And I'm suggesting that it's up to us to let people know when we mean it. Doesn't mean that they're not busy. Ellen, you might need to run. We might be passing like this and go, Ellen, how are the kids? How's it going with the kids? Or how's the family? She goes, pretty good. And I say, so what's new with the family since the last time I saw you? And she says, oh, same old, same old. And she keeps walking because she's busy because she has to get over here because it's fine. But if we don't dig in deeper often, people don't know we're genuine and really care. And we fall in these rhetorical patterns of conversation where we don't really connect, especially with people we don't know intimately. So I'm going to suggest another idea. When I walked into this event tonight, when I walk into any event, when I walk into Kiddush after services, when I walk into someone's home for Yom-Tov, I don't care. Unless it's my own children, my husband, or very close friends, I'm prepared with things to talk about. Because the worst time to think of something to talk about is when there's nothing to talk about. It's true. So today I could talk to anybody here besides the obvious, which I just talked about. Are you from Denver? How are you connected with Hillel? Could ask, you know, have you heard about this lottery thing? I mean, who hasn't heard about this? And if you haven't, I'm going to No, you have. You haven't heard about Oh, let me tell you, it's up to 1 billion something. What would you do if you won all that money? That's exactly what I would ask you. You give it to Hillel. Right. Well, we're going to have to. What's your name? We're holding you to this. Yeah.
Actually, I have a raffle tonight.
You have a raffle tonight?
I have a raffle tonight, and I said, is it for Powerball?
Oh, yeah, is it for Powerball? the point, you know, that's something that's, there's something there to talk about of substance besides simply that saying those questions back and forth. People do this a lot. They'll go, let's see, what is your name? Sarit. So Sarit, let's say I got to sit next to you tonight. And let's say I said to you, which I never would, what do you do? Sarit, what do you do? How do you answer that?
I'm an educator.
This is what I say to people, by the way, when I meet them, because I don't know if they're stay-at-home moms, stay-at-home dads, in retirement, in transition, lost their job, whatever. I say to people, what keeps you busy? And then they tell me what they want me to know. I don't put people on the spot, ever. But let's pretend, because a lot of people would say that. What do you do, Sarit? And she says, I'm an educator. And where are you from, Sarit?
L.A.
Hello?
L.A.
L.A. Sorry, Sarit. What you have witnessed is an FBI agent at work. You see what I did? I asked her what she did. She said, I'm an educator. Stay on topic, Deborah. Just stay an educator. What do you mean by that? Or describe a typical day. Or, you know, how has education changed since you've been an educator? Anything to stay on topic. If I want to start with where are you from and she says L.A., then I'll stick with the L.A. Otherwise, it's like this. Bam, bam, bam. So let's try something together. I'm going to ask a question, pose a question to you, and I'd like you to pretend that we're one-on-one, and I'd like to hear your response out loud. So here's the first question. How's your day? How's your day?
Good.
How was dinner?
Good.
What's been going on? Well, I heard a lot of nothings up in the first few rows. I don't know anybody in the first few rows, but I know there's no chance of that. A lot of people say, especially women, when you ask them what's been going on, they say nothing or not much. Do you know why? Because so much is going on, they cannot think of what it is. That's why. So here's assuming the burden again. If you want to connect with me because I see you at Shul and I say, how's your week been? Because I'm new. I don't know you well. We're not intimates. We don't hang out together. We've never been at the same table together. I'm new in town, whatever it may be. And I say to you, how was your week? And you say, pretty good. How was yours? Where have we gone here? We've gone nowhere. We're still at the same place where we started. It's not a bad thing, but it doesn't bring us together. The only way to come together, to connect, is when people, I call it playing the conversation game. What happened? Oh, there was a spill. Sorry.
Let's talk about it.
What spilled? Why? You know. No. You know, I learn with kids. I never ask them what happened because it sounded so blunt. It's just like it spilled, whatever. I'm asking you to consider doing what I call playing the conversation game. You can call it whatever you want, but a lot of us get lazy, including myself. Shoshana, if we'd had time to talk, could have said, so how have you been? That's what she probably would have said if I let her, but I was in the middle of another conversation and she had, I can't find her eyes, and she had to get back to, she invited guests tonight. Is that right? You had guests tonight? Most people that know you say, how are you? Or how have you been? I'm suggesting that you give them an answer in a sentence. Nothing more, because they might not have really meant it. They might be in a hurry or want to talk to somebody else or just being polite. But when someone says to you, how are you? How are the kids? How's work? How was the holiday? You went on a vacation. How was your vacation? Give them a sentence so they have something to talk with you about. Tonight, for instance, as we were leaving the building, If Lori said to me, oh, it's cold out here, or she might say, isn't it cold out here, a question or a statement. If I was in a hurry, Lori, because I haven't seen my husband for many days, and he's not happy about this tonight, then I would say, oh, sure is, and march to my car. I would be polite, but keep going. I'm not going to play the conversation game. I'm not going to allow myself to be engaged. I need to go. On the other hand, okay, I'm sure there's some game on TV. He's perfectly entertained. I travel all the time for work. As somebody said to me earlier, you know, travel makes the heart grow fonder, so what's 5 more minutes? And when Lori says to me, it's cold out there, what I would probably say to you, Lori, is, I've got to tell you, Lori, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. That's where, I mean, I went to the University of Buffalo also, and it's not cold here at all. Let me tell you, this is not cold. Lori might say, oh, you're from Buffalo, and walk to her car. She has to go. Did I go on and on about my kids' GPAs? Mention my aches and pains? Go on and on about what I've got to do to... No! I just made a statement in a sentence in case she did want to connect with me. Because I certainly have 4 or 5 minutes for every conversation is an opportunity. Unless I really have to go, which I don't, every conversation is an opportunity. Now, if you did want to talk to me, Lori, look at the directions you can go. Deborah, Buffalo? Yeah, I've always wondered, is it as bad as they say there? What do they do in the winter there, Deborah? Or maybe you might ask me, what's it like having a Super Bowl loser year after year? After year. So will you think for a moment, if you don't mind, about what you're going to say to somebody the next time they see you next week? And they say, how have you been? Or how are you? How was your week? And you have to decide what you're willing to disclose, of course. I try to be prepared all the time, because otherwise one-word answers come flying out of my mouth. Have you been good? How about you? How are the kids? Great. How are yours? The only people that ask about your kids that don't want to hear a sentence are the ones that really ask you because they want to talk about theirs. You know how that is. How's John? Great. Oh, have you heard about Jeremy? Jeremy's doing this, 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 and this. You know what I call that in my book? Matching. We all match. Women match a lot. You know what we do? So how have you been? Great, we went on a vacation to wherever. And instead of me questioning you more, oh, why did you choose that location, or what was that like, or what was the highlight of your vacation? I say, oh, we went there once. When we went there, it was just, I mean, that's matching. Who has kids in college right now? Right here, what is your name?
Hillary.
Hillary, tell me about one of your children in college. What were you looking at? Is she here?
No,
or me
no.
Here?
Oh. His best friend is here.
Oh, okay.
Gabe left yesterday for Emory, and I really miss him.
Oh, I do too. That's so hard to get through, I think, that Gabe left. Okay, but watch this. This is what I would do. It's hard to hold my tongue, because my tongue wants to do this. Oh, when my son Jared left, he went back east to school. It was horrible for me. I missed him so. I missed him before he left. Really, Deborah? Because I think you know all that. You know all about yourself and your son and how much you missed him. Guess what you don't know about? Hillary and Gabe. I know nothing about Hillary and Gabe, but it's such a natural. Women want a commonality, and that's a good thing. And, you know, after I find out what prompted Gabe to choose Emory, if this was something that he had set his sights on, even though it's, you know, I'm sure you miss him, but you must be very proud. And then to tell me a little bit about Gabe. I'd like to hear, outside of school, what is he interested in? Then it might be okay with me to say, oh, you know, when my children went away, the first one was the worst, I would cry in the grocery store. Then it's okay to do that. But not before I show some interest in what you're talking about. Here's another favorite thing I do with people. When I find out you're an educator, let's say, Sarita, I didn't know anything about your community or who you were or anything like that. I'll say to somebody when I know, let's say you're a stay-at-home. Who's a stay-at-home mom? Okay, what is your name?
Marissa.
Marissa? Because I was a stay-at-home mom for years, and this is what would happen to me. What do you do? Now, this will show you my age. I'd say housewife. I don't think, is that word used anymore? I don't think so. No, but I said that. I'm a lot older than most people in the room. Okay, so either way, say you stay at home as your kid. Whatever you say, Marissa, this is what would happen next. Nothing. Nothing would happen next. There would be no conversation. It was right up there with saying I was an engineer. Like, nothing would happen after that either. You told me, if I said, what do you do? You say you're a psychiatrist. I wouldn't talk to you either. So it's the same. I'd be scared. But it was the same thing when I stayed at home with my kids. But what I say to a woman that I meet that stays at home with her kids, I say the same thing I'm about to say to Sarit in a different way. I say, what keeps you busy outside of the kids? What do you do for fun for you? And I would say to you, what keeps you busy outside of your work as an educator? Now, you might talk about your kids. I don't know what you're going to talk about because I don't know you well enough. And I don't know what you're going to talk about, but you must do something, one thing for yourself. Do you, Marissa? If you don't, let's go. You know, you must read a book, do yoga, whatever, go for walks. I don't know. I don't have time for small talk, so I'm not going to find out. Okay, so I say to people, Rochelle, I found out your husband's in wealth management. I think, where are you, Rochelle? Rochelle, if I had the chance to meet him, I would say, what keeps you busy outside of your work? Or what do you do for fun? And then he'll tell me what he's willing to tell me. He might talk about the kids. He might talk about a hobby. Because my goal is to get to know people. To talk about their work or what they do is to, I think, be one-dimensional. So if those expressions work for you, what keeps you busy? What do you do for fun? When I meet students, I like to say to them, where's Chaya? Chaya? Hi, I know you don't like to be picked on. Chaya, what keeps you busy outside of school? Your friends. Okay, well, we talk about what your favorite thing to do with your friends is, but we, once again, don't have time, especially because you're blushing so much. So, and that's, you know, both of these young ladies, it's Adina. Okay, Adina, and I did get to talk to them for a few minutes. They're both seniors, and this is just, I hate some of these questions. Don't ask a question that you don't know the answer to if it's personal. Here's one. Did you get into Northwestern? What kind of question? I don't even know if you applied. I'm making it up. But how many times did Gabe get asked, did you get into Emory? What if he didn't get in? Why do we ask these questions when we don't know the answers? Here's a better question. How's your college search going? Catch me up on your college search. If you don't know if the child's going to college, what's you know, bring me up to date about your plans after high school. That's a good question. You know, my Sarah, who well, no, not really anymore. But my Sarah is the youngest of four, and this was a nightmare. About 5 years ago, people would say to me, and it clobbered me in the locker room, at a party. Did Sarah graduate? Wow, what an interesting question. So you know my daughter's name, and you're asking me, did she graduate? No, she didn't. She went to CU Boulder, and she had a great time, just like they say out there. But no, she didn't. And thanks so much for asking me in front of all these people. Why do people ask these questions? Here's a better question. What's new with Sarah? Catch me up on Sarah. What's Sarah up to? Now, and for whatever it's worth, my Sarah, as a matter of fact, SD noticed my high was backwards today. I guess I messed up today when I put it on. But this is from Sarah. She got married on September 26th, and she, yes, the baby at four got married. Nobody else is married. So she got married. The next day, she graduated from college last May, by the way, at 28, so mazel tov, thank goodness. Okay. But she gave me this high and gave herself the same high, and she said, Mom, we'll both wear the same highs. Isn't that sweet? And she then left 2 days later for Ho Chi Minh City, Saigon, and she's still not home, with her husband, of course, and they're just on a one-way ticket. So I told Essa, I said, I can't even take it off. I'm too afraid that if I take it off. That's who went to school with Teddy. Teddy's wife is here, I hear. It's my Sarah, right? Yes, hi. And he's very lucky. So anyways, I digress. I think I'm about to run out of time, right, Esty?
No.
No? Yes. 10 after 8? No? It's your decision.
10 after 8.
Okay. Let's just talk about a couple more things. First of all, exiting people. Let's talk about exiting people. My husband does this. He says things at the theater. We'll be at the intermission. We're subscribers to the theater. He'll say to somebody, somebody will walk up to him, say hello. I can tell Steve has no idea what their name is, and I'm about to do this. Give the gift of my name. Find out what their name is. You know, assume the burden. Make everybody feel comfortable here. But before I can even do this, Steve goes, excuse us, I need to go to the bathroom before the program starts again. There we go, we're walking over. I would say nice to meet you to these people, but I haven't met them, so it's a little hard. So I just, and then he heads back, he's going to our seats. This happened about a month and a half ago. I go, you said you need to go to the bathroom, Steve. Well, no, Deb, I was just getting away from them. Get behind those doors. I don't care what you do. Don't say I need to do something and not do it, because it hurts people's feelings. But guess what? We do it unintentionally all the time. This is how we do it. Lori, I see Paula. Is that correct? I see Paula over there. I really want to catch up with her before she leaves. Like, we're at Kippis, right? We're at Kippis. Really want to catch up to Paula before she takes off. It's good to hear about, you know, that vacation you went on, whatever it is. And on my way to Paula, Valerie, oh my gosh, how have you been? Oh, I haven't seen you. It's been like a few months. I told you I was going to Paula, but I stopped at Valerie. My intentions were very honorable in my heart. They were. I really do want to talk to Paula, but I stopped to talk to Valerie. Sometimes people say I need to go get coffee or I need to go get some more salmon. And on their way to the salmon, they run into one of their friends. When that happens, can I make a suggestion? Because it hurts people's feelings. If they're paying attention, and 50% of the people are paying attention, and 50% are not. But those that are, it hurts their feelings. And we are assuming the burden of making people feel comfortable. If I say I need to get some more food, and I'm on the way to the food, and I see you, Emily, this is what I'm going to say. Emily, give me a second. I need to grab some more food. I'm going to be right back. I really want to hear what's been going on in your life since the last time I saw you. Or, Emily, would you like to join me? I want to go over and get some food. But you're going to see me go get food, because that's what I said my intentions were. So be aware of that when you leave people. The best way to leave people that don't want you to leave is to give them a warning. I call it a white flag. I bet this happens to rabbis' wives all the time, and rabbis, but I think their spouses, really, it must be very challenging, I think. I've spoken to many rabbis' wives, so I happen to know that's a fact. And Esty would never say this, because Esty's would never say anything negative, but I've heard this from others. The best way to leave somebody is to say to them, wow, now I'm just making this up, Hillary. I'm making this up, but I know your son's name, so I'm going to use it. So now let's say she's just gone on and on about Gabe. Oh, AP classes, you know, baseball scholarship, soccer, see? Okay, and just, you know, how perfect. And she's just, I can't take it anymore. I just cannot take one more minute of this. So watch me. Wow, Gabe sounds like such a successful student. So I've acknowledged what I've heard in a sentence. Because it is really nice for people to hear acknowledgement that you are actually listening to them. Not paraphrasing, just acknowledging. Boy, Gabe sounds like a very successful student. You know, I really want to go over there and catch up with Emily, but before I take off, tell me, what would you say the number one ingredient to successfully raising a kid is these days? I've let you know. I need to leave. This is going to either end in dignity for you, Hillary, or not. So, if you don't wrap it up, which is always there's potential there from certain people who just go on and on and on, in 2 minutes, if you don't wrap it up, now I think it's cool for me to interrupt you and say, I've got to interrupt you. If I don't get with Emily, we're just going to take off. We'll have to catch up about Gabe another time, and off I go. That's my phone. I really apologize, but I don't think it was. Okay, I thought it was. Okay, so now, I think, because we want to hear from Abigail, okay, a couple things that I want to cover. Because I'm going to close with a poem tonight, and I really believe that everyone in this room will feel connected to the poem, and you'll find meaning. But before I do, this is really important to me, because it is my husband. And I'm very appreciative that Altura gave the space and did whatever they did for this, but coincidentally, I'm married to a periodontist as well. And Esty didn't know that. And he's right here in this part of town. And his name is Steve Tillis. And he does implants, and he's, you know, laser, you know, comfort-free. I know more jargon, pockets and all this than I ever want to know in my whole life. But don't go to a periodontal conference, because it'll gross you out for the rest of your life. But so Steve Tillis is sponsoring me tonight. I just want you to know that. Because this is very uncomfortable. Because, you know, they're friendly colleagues, but they're in, you know, this two different businesses. So I do want to say that in honor of my Steve. And of course, since we don't have, I kept my name fine. Because my Zadie, you know, came from the Ukraine during the pogroms, and this is a true story. You know, he practiced and practiced and practiced to get through Ellis Island. He was so nervous, and When they said to him, "What's your name?" he thought they said, "How are you?" So he said, "Fine." And that's why our name is Fine. And as I told some people here, I'm the oldest of five daughters, and I chose to keep my father's last name. Although it's not working out because my daughter already changed her name, so whatever. So it's dying now. My father had five daughters, but whatever. That's what I did. But it worked out for my business, the fine art of small talk, and everything has the word fine in it. My dad sort of gets that. He goes, "Oh, it's our name." "Yeah, Dad, it's our name." Okay. You're such a smart guy. He misses a lot. So I'm closing with a poem. He liked it better when I was an engineer. He could put a label on it. So, the poem is entitled Thoughts from a New Member. I see you at the meetings, but you never say hello. You're busy all the time you're there with those you really know. I sit amongst the members, yet I'm a lonely gal. The new ones feel as strange as I. The old ones pass us by. Darn it, you folks urged us to join. You talked of fellowship. You could just cross the room, you know, but you never make the trip. Can't you just nod your head and smile? Stop and shake a hand. Then go sit amongst your friends. Now that I'd understand. I'll be at your next meeting, and I hope that you will spend the time to introduce yourself. I join to be your friend. I think it's up to each and every one of us, myself included, of course, to take the risk to walk up to someone new, to look around the room, especially in rooms where you know a lot of people, and to look for the person standing by themselves or sitting by themselves and engaging them. And number two, to assume the burden. My goal is to make you feel comfortable whenever you're with me. If you feel comfortable when you're with me, you'll feel good about me. It's just as simple as that. And that's not saying something like, "And I don't know your name." What is your name? Right here. That's going to win the lottery. What's your name? Linda? Linda, what a beautiful necklace. And that is a very beautiful necklace, okay? And it's a great way to start a conversation, but sometimes it becomes schmoozy to compliment people. I'm talking about making people feel good when they're with you. Wait, did you make it? Oh, you made it. Well, stand-ups are amazing. Oh, great. Oh, Linda, that's awesome.
Thank you, Lord.
Wow, what an artist.
That's sexy, Shoshana.
Oh, Shoshana. It is, isn't it? Shoshana is quite the artist, isn't she? She did. That's great. Well, come, let's go sell your necklace up here together. Anyways, I guess that poem resonates with you as much as it resonates with me. When people walk up to me, I'm so thankful to get to know them, especially in a room where I don't know people. It's up to me to be the one to do that. It's not up to me to wait for other people to do it. And I'm saying whether you're shy or introverted or not, I'm an introverted person. Are you shocked? I hope so. Because I wasn't behaving like one. And I'm asking you not to behave like one when you're in settings. Behave like whoever you are, but take the risk to walk up to someone new. Assume the burden of other people's comfort. When you have the time, every conversation is an opportunity. So lastly, I just want to thank Hillel. This beautiful book they gifted me with. Isn't this wonderful? First of all, Ethics of the Fathers. I mean, my father's going to be so excited. I'm going to say, "Dad, look what I got as a gift." And then once again, he'll say, "What do you do? That you would get such a beautiful gift?" No, he will. That's what he's very smart. He's 90 years old. He just doesn't get what I do. It's very complicated for him. So it's not what he expected. So I'm very thankful to be with such an audience of my community. Thank you.